last week our purpose statement in our Constitution, and I am pointing out the word neo-evangelicalism that appears there. And most of the time when I talk to people and ask them if they know what that is, they don't know what that is. And so it's important that I spend time explaining what that is, because we say we reject the compromising policy of neo-evangelicalism. Last time I talked about Dr. Akingay. Does anybody remember why I mentioned Akingay? And what was significant about him other than the quote that you have up there? Okay, he's the one who really came up with the term new evangelicalism in the 1940s. And so he said these three things were the structure. A determination to add the social gospel to the scriptural gospel. We spent some time on that. Then we looked at the eight characteristics of new evangelical thinking by Dr. J.B. Williams. So I'm going to keep going through these. And then we looked at definitions of new evangelicalism. Some of them are a characterization of new evangelicalism. Before I close, was an article written by Dr. R.C. Sproul. How many are at least familiar with the name R.C. Sproul? Okay. Most Christians are familiar with some of the things he what you read, because although he may say things that are scriptural when it comes six. There you got some information about him. He was born in 1939, passed away in 2007. He was a theologian, and he has been described as the most Reformed century. You may not be familiar with Reformed theology, but it has to do more with I am a dispensationalist. He would be reformed in his theology. I'm dispensational in my theology. He's reformed in his theology. It doesn't mean he's not a Christian. It just means that there are things in his understanding of the Bible that are quite a bit different than what I would understand and what you understand. But anyway, my point in quoting him is to let you hear what he says about fundamentalism as a new evangelical. And so some of this will be up on the screen. But a lot of it I'm just going to read in the article, and I highlight some of the things by putting them up on the screen for you. Okay, here I go. It is no new insight to note that in America, the evangelical church is worldly and anemic. Now, when he says evangelical, he's talking about not fundamental, but the evangelical church is worldly. We are so earthly minded that we are no heavenly good. How does that fit with the sermon this morning, by the way? Seek those things. But whence comes the worldliness? Like any other sin, we have options for placing its advent. We could argue that it began with the latest fad to hit the church, or we could go back to the beginning, to the garden. Both have their advantages. It might be more helpful, however, to see the beginning of this descent at the height of the fundamentalist modernist controversy. Fundamentalism is so named for a fundamental reason. It was a movement that concerned itself with affirming, defending, and maintaining the fundamentals of the faith. Now, that's really a pretty good definition. Fundamentalism has to do with affirming, defending, and maintaining the fundamentals of the faith. As a movement, it affirmed the authority of the Bible. It affirmed the accounts therein of creation, of miracles, of the virgin birth, of the death and resurrection of Jesus. See, you're saying, well, every Christian affirms that. This is thus the controversy. The modernists were coming in and saying, virgin birth, creation, oh, you believe that? You don't believe in, you ever heard this? Science. You heard that lately? Science. Okay. It affirmed the necessity of conversion through faith in the finished work of Christ. And every true Christian would say, amen. It affirmed, in short, the defining issues of historical evangelicalism. Why then isn't the controversy called the evangelical modernist controversy? To get at that answer, we must ask another. What is it that distinguishes evangelicals and fundamentalists? Suddenly, our problem becomes clear. An evangelical is an evangelical, is a fundamentalist that wants the respect of modernists and sells his soul to get it. Jesus said, what about those who fear man? The fear of man is a... And that's what they've got. They fear what men think about them. They fear, he's not going to look at me as intellectual and as smart and so forth, and I want to get this guy's admiration for me. And so they want the respect of the modernists, and they sell their souls to get it. That is to say, the difference between a fundamentalist and an evangelical isn't the content of the respective beliefs, but the way in which those beliefs are held. Fundamentalists, to their credit, cling to the fundamentalist like a pit bull on a T-bone. There was nothing attractive or sophisticated about it, but everyone knew you'd never tear the two apart. The evangelical, on the other hand, sought to find, at least culturally, a middle ground. Yes, we believe in the authority of the Bible, but we believe it for nice professional academic reasons. Indeed, all that we believe for nice professional academic reasons. What separates evangelicals from fundamentalists is that we evangelicals don't breathe fire. And we have fancy degrees hanging in our studies instead of pictures of Billy Sunday. How many of you have heard of Billy Sunday? Billy Sunday was a tremendous evangelist back in the 19-teens, 1920s, early 1930s. I've got a book my mom and dad had when I was a little boy on Billy Sunday. Anyway, he was that's why he says instead of pictures of Billy Sunday. We evangelicals are they who cut this deal with the modernists. We will call you brother. Does anybody know how this ends? If you call us scholar, I will call you my brother if you will call me. See, they want the respect. That's the evangelical. That's the new evangelical. This is not by a fundamentalist writing this. This is by a new evangelical writing this about fundamentalists, acknowledging that's what they do, that's what they believe. Please don't misunderstand. The point isn't that the right way to believe in the fundamentals is to be stupid. Instead, the point is that the right way to believe in the fundamentals is with a holy indifference to what others think about us. Amen. We don't care what you think. Anything less leads us right where we are. That is, any movement that begins with the fear of those we are seeking to win has already been won by those that are feared. You got to think about that first. Culture itself reflects our uncertainty, refusing to make affirmations just like us. Our shepherd, however, calls us to a different path. He tells us that having those outside the faith revile us for our faith is something to be sought, not something to be avoided. That those who experience the disdain of the world for his name's sake are blessed. The fundamentalists of the last may we be given a double portion of the spirit of the fundamentalists. They fought the good fight while we collaborated. They kept the faith while we merely kept our positions in our communities. May we learn to fear no man but to fear God, for such is the beginning of wisdom. End of article. Now, again, that is by a new evangelical describing the fundamentalists. And he's the fear of man that he decries is the very thing that he can do. This was copied in 2006. He died in 2017. There were things that he would say from time to time that you go, man, that's good. But he stayed in it. That's the fear of man. And once you're in something, by the way, it is really, really hard to come out of it. It is very difficult. So I'm not saying that for him to come out would have been easy. He would have had to have abandoned the PCA, the Presbyterian Church of America, because it's totally liberal. He'd had to have abandoned so many things. Well, man, you give up your pension. You give up this and that. And boy, you give up so many things to do that. That's why never get involved in the first place. And that's why, as your pastor, I make decisions here that you may not understand, but I go, no, I don't want to go there. I don't want to get started with that. I don't want nothing to do with that. And in some cases, I could. You know, we could do that. But I'd be doing it like, boy, I hope he doesn't say such and such. Questions or comments about our fundamentalist betters? Comments, baby, Brad.
I was just thinking, if you're talking about Presbyterian Church, about Dr. Leal talking about Nathan, Jay Fresh and Nathan.
Yes.
He was Presbyterian, I think very high up.
Yes. Yes.
He fought many battles that were very good. I don't remember reading that.
Yes. G. Gresham Machen, my elementary Greek book is by Machen. And so I learned much about who he was simply by studying the Greek manual he wrote. Tremendously intelligent man. In fact, he wrote a book on the virgin birth of Christ that is phenomenal. He was fighting the battle back then. There is a book. Maybe you were making reference to it. It's called In Pursuit of Purity. This is a book written by Dr. Beale. He wrote this book in 1986. And it's a American Fundamentalism Since 1850. And he talks about the rise of new evangelicalism, but you go way back to 1850. He's starting to talk in here about some of the things that started creeping into churches, and how that became it became tremendous controversies. I mean, really some of the fighting, and I'm saying fighting, the fighting that took place at conventions and so forth, you wouldn't believe it. Guys would stand up and what they would say, mostly they would be respectful, but it was a fight. Dr. Ed Nelson, you know Dr. Ed Nelson? Pastored South Sheridan Baptist Church in Denver. He took a tremendous stand back in the 1950s and 1960s in pulling out of the conservative Baptist movement. You say, well, it's conservative in name only. So tremendous battles. I know that just a few years ago before he died, he talked about how that in a meeting, when they were trying to pull out of the conservative Baptist movement, a guy stood up and said something about fundamentalism. Dr. Nelson stood up and pointed his finger at him. This is in front of a whole crowd. Pointed his finger at him and said, you're wrong, and here's the truth. And they would have this. It was a fight, not physical, but it was men wanting to stand for the truth and not compromise. Travis? No, once you start departing from the fundamentals, you're going to start getting into climate change, social gospel, tolerance toward sexual perversion like homosexuality, transvestitism. You're going to start tolerating all those things. Once you start departing from the fundamentals. That's why this is so important that I'm addressing this for the second time in about 15 years. Karen? Right. You will find that, okay, I'm talking about the conservative Baptist movement and most of the churches that belong to it. Once something starts going the wrong direction, you're still going to find pockets of people who are still doing the right thing, and that may have been your church. But eventually, if you stay in a convention that is going astray, you either better get out of it or turn it right. Typically, you can't turn it right. Once it's gone, it's gone. The best thing to do, the scriptural thing to do, is get out of it and have nothing to do with supporting it because you are now supporting it when those at the top say it. Now, we are independent. We don't belong to a convention. This is not a fundamental Baptist fellowship church either. Do you understand that? I personally belong to the FBF. The church does not. That's because the FBF does not accept churches. It's a fellowship of men and women. Any of you could join the FBF, any one of you, if you adhere to their statement of faith. And I would encourage you to do so. And that just helps identify you, and you know what you stand for. So it's a fellowship of individuals, not churches. But you've got a convention, like Southern Baptist Convention. I would never recommend somebody be a part of the Southern Baptist Convention. Why? What's happened in the Southern Baptist Convention? Well, go to their convention, see what they're arguing about. They're arguing about critical race theory in the Southern Baptist Convention. That's not even an issue. If you can't understand what critical race theory is doing, the Marxism dressed up as racism, you're gone. They're debating about women being in the ministry, in the pulpit. Things like that. It's time to get out and not have anything to do with it. Okay. For some reason, I've got the next slide saying intellectualism. Oh, that's why. Because I'm done with this. So I've got to get out of this mouse needs to be put in a trap somewhere. Let me see if I can find. Brad, you had that second one up, right? I got it. Thank you, sir. I found it. Okay. This is, I am illustrating something by showing you what is now coming up. As we look at the difference between Bible fundamentalism and the new evangelicals, and I say, what's the difference? This will help illustrate this. How many times have I said you can go to the world of politics and find a tremendous example of what's happening in the church? You know what I'm saying? So this whole article is about politics. Okay? This will tell you what's happening in the churches. What this has to do with is who's divisive. If you're in a convention where you have conservatives and new evangelicals, who's going to be accused of being divisive? The fundamentalists or the new evangelicals? Who is it, Christy? Fundamentalists. You're the divisive one. What he illustrates in this article politically is if you have conservatives and liberals in the political world, who's accused of being divisive? Conservatives always are. Okay? That's what he's going to argue here. And yet, who really is divisive? The liberals. There is no ambiguity. Exactly as the illegal insists that a fence should be erected at the border. By the way, this was written back in 2007. They've got this list. But you've probably heard somebody by the name of George, I don't know how you say his last name, those who cannot learn from history are doomed to repeat it. The United States is repeating what happened in Rome. And it's the same thing with Orthodox Christianity. Orthodox means straight. Orthodox is actually a good word. Don't confuse it with the Orthodox Church. Orthodoxy is straight. The difference between Bible fundamentalism and new evangelicalism starts with history. And so a basis for discernment is necessary. We've got to have discernment. My wife read an article this last week on discernment. And the author was saying something like, he's a pastor who wrote this article. He says, sometimes people will walk up to me and say, hey, is such and such good or bad? And what they want is, or this. It's not that easy. Hey, is J.C. Sproul good or bad? Well, it depends on what you're talking about. If you're talking about some of the things he's written is really, really good. But man, the way he practices, what he does, is really... So can I give you an up or down thumb? I can't. And it requires discernment. Discernment is something that is so necessary among Christians that you have the discernment to say, you know what? There's cases where he really does what's good, but you know what? I'm going to stay away because what he does here is going to lead me astray. You say, man, you're looking for perfectionism. Anything wrong with that? What's wrong with perfectionism? Well, it leads to pride. Well, yeah. It may seem to be, but that pride that you sense is your take on it. It doesn't mean that the guy is full of pride or arrogant. It seems that way because he's trying to do what's right all the time. And it's a hard road to toe. So I'm going to get into kind of the history of fundamentalism. And it really kind of starts at the end of the war between the states, what most people call the Civil War, that I call the war between the states. Evangelism flourished at the end of the war between the states. Do you remember the name Dwight Moody? Okay, let's do something. If you know these names, raise your hand. Dwight Moody. Good, hands down. Sam Jones. Not as many know about Sam Jones. Sam Jones. Billy Sunday. Yeah, I just mentioned him this morning. I don't have these written down. Paul. Oh, Gypsy Smith. How many have ever heard of Gypsy Smith? Hardly anybody. Some of these were the great preachers, not just right after the war between the states, but into the early 1900s. Tremendous preachers. Bob Jones, you would know because that's where I'm a graduate of that school. Bob Jones, senior, tremendous evangelist, a contemporary of Billy Sunday, good friends. In fact, they named some of the dorms. One of the dorms on campus is named after Nell Sunday, his wife. He used to come go preach at Bob Jones long before I was there, by the way. And so with the flourishing of evangelism, there came this rise in religious liberalism, commonly called modernism. The rise in religious liberalism is called modernism. And there were three main tools. Three main tools of the modernists. Darwinian evolution. comparative religion. Now, let me go back to evolution. Some theologians actually defended it because it was, are you ready? Science. Folks, the government today talks about, well, that's settled science. The whole COVID vaccine was settled science. Now people are dying from the COVID vaccine. By the way, can you believe the government calling something science when they believe that a man can be a woman, like the what's-his-face up in Pennsylvania? Rachel Levine or whatever. I never call them by the name, the woman's name, but I can't remember what his... Richard? His name is Richard. His parents named him Richard, so don't call him Rachel. And they call that science? Science to them says that a man can get pregnant? Really? You're calling that science? So just because science says something doesn't mean it's true. Because science is always open to debate, new observations. So Darwinian evolution, comparative religion. Think about it. After the war between the states, there's increased travel. And there's people going to mission fields. And people are becoming more and more aware of non-Christian religions. One reason Charles Darwin began doubting the Christian orthodoxy in which he had been reared was his exposure to arguments from comparative religion. He was starting to compare religions. Well, those people believe it. They must have a reason for believing it. I need to study that religion. There might be some good things I can take from that religion. What's going to happen when you start doing that? Well, you're starting to compare religion with religion rather than comparing religion to the Bible. So comparative religion, that's why we call it comparative religion. And then there's something called higher criticism. Doubting that Moses wrote the Pentateuch. Doubting the authorship of the book of John. Doubting the date that Daniel wrote his prophecy. So these are the three main tools of modernists. This was beginning to rise. So it's after the war between the states. Evangelism is flourishing. People are getting saved. By the way, thousands of people got saved during the war between the states on both sides, Confederates and Yankees. Probably more Confederates. But thousands of people being saved. With that, whenever Satan sees success taking place, he's got to stop it. And religious liberals began to have their heyday. I'm going to be quoting from this book called Faith of Our Fathers, Scenes from American Church History. He said, orthodoxy, which is good, that means straight doctrine, responded by creating Bible colleges and institutes, Bible conferences, and other means of propagating the truth. That's what was taking place in the late 1800s. Bible conferences. Hundreds of people would go to these Bible conferences. So that's what's taking place. Conservatives versus liberal battles raged within Baptist denominations, within Presbyterian denominations, and it became known as the fundamentalist modernist controversy. Fundamentalists took their name from a series published in the 1910s called The Fundamentals. There was a wealthy oil company businessman, Lyman Stewart, you see his name up there, who had learned as a boy to tithe his income. He had attended Bible conferences and saw the need to warn against apostasy. In 1909, he heard a man by the name of A.C. Dixon preach and told A.C. Dixon of an idea. His plan was to send a compilation of articles dedicated to defending the essential doctrines of Orthodox Christianity to every Protestant minister, evangelist, missionary, theological professor, Bible student, Sunday school superintendent, YMCA and YWCA in the English-speaking world whose address they could obtain. I'm going to print these and I want to send these out. He was going to fund it all. More than 300,000 volumes were printed at a cost of about $300,000. About back then, early 1900s, that's a lot of money. He funded the whole thing. It constituted the earliest major text for educating fundamentalists in a broad range of specialized subjects. In that regard, the set helped to prepare the movement for the controversies and battles of the 1920s. I have in my office, and I'd be glad to show anybody who requests it, my copy of The Fundamentals. I still read it. I still go to that, and I read The Fundamentals. It's a four-volume set. It's about this wide, about this tall, just a little book. He sent that out to 300,000 people. He had such a concern to defend fundamentalism and what was taking place. Well, that's where I've got to stop because our time's out. Any questions or comments? I'm really giving you something that has to do with history, so...